When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
What's up, everybody? My name is David EJ Berger. You can find me at Carl Jr. on Twitter, and welcome to Training Camp Dialed In. I'll be featuring phone calls with NFL writers and reporters from the actual sidelines of camp, getting their firsthand accounts of the action from a fantasy perspective. This is the place to be all month long, so you need to subscribe to the Fantasy Authority feed, the exclusive home of the super short run, super niche, and super essential podcast for the month of August. And we are back. It is sad to say, but August is winding down here, which also means, unfortunately, so is this podcast, only a couple episodes left. In fact, I'm a little late getting this out to you guys and gals. Was a bit caught up with the fam this weekend, family first, as they say. But we're back, and today we're talking about a backfield and a receiving core that could offer some sneaky value. We're talking about the Seattle Seahawks. I dialed up Michael Sean Dugar. You can find him at Mike Dugar on Twitter. He covers the Seahawks for The Athletic. He also hosts the Seahawks Man-to-Man podcast. He has been at camp all month long, and he's about to deliver the definitive guide to the 2022 Seattle Seahawks. What are we waiting for? Let's bring him on. Ladies and gentlemen, Mike Dugar.
Yo, what's going on?
Hey, Michael Sean, how are you?
I'm doing all right.
All right, Mike, I always like to start with the offense as a whole first. It's a new year and a new era in Seattle. Russ is gone, but there is some carryover with head coach Pete Carroll and offensive coordinator Shane Waldron entering his second year and a couple stud wide receivers here. From what you've seen and heard in camp, how is this offense going to work as a whole in terms of scheme, formations, tendencies? Are we seeing lots of two tight end sets, three wide? You know, we assume, you know, the run will be established, but what should we expect from this Seahawks team as a whole?
I'm trying in terms of personnel, probably a lot of 12. I would guess that's two tight ends, just because they want to run the ball really well. Pete Carroll really believes that in order to explode in the passing game, you know, and throw it over the defense's head, you need to get them to put an eighth man in the box, you know, so you can get one-on-one matchups outside. And he believes that to get an eighth man into the box, you have to run the ball effectively, you know. So that's kind of that establish the run mindset. So you're going to see a lot of games where they come out and try to run it on folks. So you see that to run it, you need guys who block. You guys who block, you want dudes who are heavy. Okay? So that's tight ends. That would be my guess there. It doesn't mean they're not going to throw. Every time I talk to Pete Carroll about that, he says that, like, yo, it doesn't mean we're not going to throw the ball. It just means that, yeah, when you come out there and you start punching dudes in the mouth with the run game, it makes everything go. So a lot of Will Disley and Noah Fant on the field at the same time with Tyler and DK and Rashad Penny and Ken Walker, whenever he gets healthy, like those are going to be their main skill guys, especially from a fantasy perspective.
All right. Great stuff, Mike. You've answered this next question all month. In fact, I heard you last week on VSiN give the answer, but there's been a week more of practice since then. Is Geno Smith still trending to be that starting QB, or has Locke turned the heat up on this competition?
Yeah, I think Geno's going to be the starter. You know, he just, the quarterback competition, you know, has played out very much like a Geno Smith-led team in the regular season. You know, like, Geno Smith hasn't, like, won the job. He just didn't do anything to lose it, you know, and that's kind of how he plays, too, and at least how he played last year in Seattle. Like, he didn't necessarily do anything to go win Seattle games. You know, they smoked the Jaguars because of the Jaguars. And even then, there was a special teams touchdown in that game. And then he didn't go do anything to win those games against the Steelers and the Saints. He just basically tried to hold on long enough to just not lose it. And eventually did, particularly in that Steelers game with the strip sack in overtime. So I think that was always going to be how this played out. It wasn't necessarily could Drew beat Geno. It was more of, was Geno going to do anything to lose the job? you know, and that, those things look different in real time, you know, like it's a difference between like forcing the ball up the seam, you know, in practice versus, oh, never mind, I'll just check it to the running back. Right? You force that ball up the seam, you may go win the job. You check it down to the running back, you're not going to lose it. And if the tight end catches that ball up the seam, you're good. But if it gets picked by the safety, that's how you lose the job, you know? So I think that people were looking at it the wrong way. Maybe that's some of us as writers and media people too, not framing it that way. But I like to think I try to do a decent job of that, is frame it as, it was never really, is Geno going to win the job over Drew? Is Geno going to lose the job to Drew? Those are different to me.
Well, I love how you framed that. I think a lot of people are framing, you know, this QB, whether it's either guy in there, is going to maybe, you know, limit the upside on this offense. But in your opinion, you know, you're there, you know, is there an unforeseen upside from either of these guys? You know, maybe this Seahawks offense pops a little bit more than people are expecting.
No, I think that the one thing that Seattle could, maybe people outside of Seattle would bank on, you know, just like, hey, man, it don't matter who's throwing it. They got Tyler Lockett and DK Metcalf. Anybody can get the ball to them. And, like, that makes sense. But getting the ball to DK Metcalf in practice has been a lot more difficult than you would think. And I don't think it's because Seattle's DBs are, like, all-world players, you know, particularly the corners. You know, a lot of the times they had rookie corners, you know, on DK, and balls still can't get there. I'm talking deep. I'm talking goal line fades. They've been connecting on some stuff over the middle. But that's a little easier to do in practice because, you know, there's no threat of just getting popped by a safety or a linebacker. Outside the numbers stuff in the red zone, they've connected on some. Like, you can just Twitter search it and see that. But it's been harder than you would like to imagine it being if you're Seattle. Like, if you're Seattle, you're thinking, all right, we're taking a step back at quarterback, but damn it, we got the best receiving duo in the league. You know, we can get the ball to them. And I mean, they're getting a lot of targets in practice, but, you know, a lot of PBUs, a lot of overthrows, a lot of plays where you're just like, man, hopefully DK knows what he signed up for, you know, inking a new contract with this quarterback situation. So, it's been a little underwhelming in that specific regard, which makes me think that, like, this season could be a struggle, because if you can't get the ball to those two consistently in practice, you know, how much harder is it going to be in the game when the schemes are harder, the pass rush can actually hit you in the face, you know, and the corners get better. Yeah, so it could. I don't see any long-term upside with either guy.
Okay, well, I did want to ask about DK and Tyler as individual players. You know, let's pull quarterback out of it for a minute. I don't feel like there's enough talk about, you know, them and their individual camps. How have these guys trended this month themselves?
Oh, Tyler's always great in practice just because he's at the point in his career where he probably don't even need to practice. He doesn't need to practice like with an 11 on 11 or 7 on 7 to get better. You know, like he can do things on his own, you know, to work on little skills, releases, or, you know, the timing at the top of a certain route. You know, he can just run that on air off to the side for 2 hours every day, and then he would get better. He's kind of just, he's got such a great feel for the game, and it's kind of natural for him. You know, his uncle played in the NFL. His dad played in the NFL. They both set a gazillion records at Kansas State, and then Tyler went on to go break a bunch of them. So, like, I think Tyler's mom ran track or something like that in high school, so maybe in college as well. So he just got, like, natural speed, natural feel of being a receiver, because both of his uncle and his dad were receivers. So he's just unguardable in practice for the most part. Like, if the ball is on target, he's going to catch it. He's probably going to be open. And if he's not open, he probably still catch. So, like, he's the only guy, you know, when I watch – receivers go up against Tariq Woolen, their 6'4 rookie from the fifth round. Tyler gets open against that dude whenever he wants. Like, he uses Tyreek's length against him, you know, and the fact that, you know, Tyler is lower to the ground and can be shifty and can cut a little quicker. And, like, watching those two go at it one-on-one, like, Tariq does a good job, but you can see, like, if you just watch the two of them, you'd be like, oh, okay, number 16's been in the league for a while. Like, even if you just were only looking at their numbers. DK, sometimes I just feel bad for him, man. He can get open, you know, and if he's not open, throw it. You know, I think that's where having Geno probably decreases DK's fantasy value a little bit, because, you know, Drew might force it to him. It doesn't seem like Geno wants to force anything, you know, which is fine. He plays for a risk-averse coach. But, man, I feel like there's a lot more opportunities for DK to have catches like he had against the Jaguars over Shaquille Griffin in the red zone. That was a throw from Geno. where it's just like, you know what? He's covered, but give him a chance. You know, like Russ will give him those chances every now and then, but I feel like this year in particular, like Geno would do himself some good and DK some good if he was just like, you know, how that meme is on Twitter, like, you know what, screw it. Such and such is down there somewhere. You know, like that's how DK needs to be treated, man, because his catch radius is crazy, but you just don't see it that much in practice.
This is why we're here, Mike. I'm loving this. Okay, well, any other wide receivers, you know, going to pop up? It sounds like it's not great for the top two guys, but, you know, D. Eskridge enters his second year. They traded for J.J. Arcega-Whiteside. You know, is there any chance for any other guys to pop up, maybe pay off on a DFS slate every now and then? What's the outlook for the guys behind the top two guys?
Not very good. I think that in general, and I made a joke to this to the ESPN guy Brady Henderson the other day. I was like, man, somebody at our companies should like crunch the numbers and like spit out what the average season. I would say let's take it the last 10 years, maybe last five. The average season for a team's number three wide receiver, like what does that look like? And I bet you it's a lot more underwhelming than people imagine. You know, like a number three receiver is important, but he doesn't really put up numbers. Like even on a really good team, you know, like it's really rare. And I mean the number three receiver, not the number three pass catcher. So exclude a running back or a tight end. Just take the average season. Like you may get an outlier season from somebody, like maybe Michael Gallup had a good year last year or something. You know, being the number three to CD and Amari. But in general, the third guy you really just hope he just wins some one-on-one coverage, catches some passes on third down. You know, stuff like that. So I tend to have really low expectations for number three receivers, man. If a guy catches 35 balls for like 400 yards, four or five touchdowns, boy, that's a great year, you know, for a number three, especially when the number two is like a Tyler Lockett, you know, or a DK Metcalf. So I think DK Eskridge will have some splash plays. You know, if Marquise Goodwin's healthy, which he should be, he'll have some as well, but I think just in terms of a year-long fantasy outlook, their value really just will come if DK or Tyler gets hurt.
Where we might need the help the most is in the running back room. Ken Walker is dealing with a hernia injury. It sounds like he has surgery, and it seems like Rashad Penny will be the guy in week one. He was the top running back in fantasy the last month or so of the season, but there's also talk about Travis Homer being the pass-catching back ahead of DJ Dallas, who could still factor in himself. There's a lot of guys here. You know, we mentioned it being run heavy, and we know Pete Carroll loves his running backs. Can you help us figure this out? How's this going to play out in 2022?
You know, if you'd asked me that a month ago, I would have just told you, Ken Walker and Rashad Penny will be the early down guys. And the only time you'll see DJ Dallas and Travis Homer is on third down. And I feel like, man, you know what? It's not even a coincidence. You know, because I talked to DJ Dallas early in camp, and he was like, yeah, I feel slept on. Like, I feel underrated. Like, y'all going to see. He's had a really good camp, probably the best camp he's had, running between the tackles. You know, you can see that against the Steelers in particular, the first preseason game. And then Travis might be averaging like 9 yards a carry in the preseason. And it's not like he's getting, you know, third and 12 carries and then picking up like 10 yards. You know, like that's kind of how his career has gone. You know, that's why like EPA, expected points added when it comes to running backs. It accounts for stupid stuff like that. But now, nah, man, he's like picking up like 16 yards on first and 10. Running between the tackles really well. And I think DJ and Travis kind of saw them draft Ken Walker and Ken be the focus of the run game. And they're like, wait a minute, we've been here for a little bit, you know? So now I think actually both those guys could be between the tackles runners, which is like bad news from a fantasy standpoint, because then you get like the running back, the dreaded running back by committee thing. But I think while Ken's hurt right now and Rashad's actually out with COVID right now, like, DJ and Travis have, you know, perhaps more value than they had, you know, maybe if you'd asked me that in late July. They both look really good. And even Pete Carroll said the other day, he was like, I have no problem handing the ball to Travis on first or second down. That's something Pete would not have said in any of the past 3 years.
Cause for concern for Penny drafters. We're pocketing that information, knowing Penny might split some carries here. All right, Mike, let's round to the finish in the tight end room. Noah Fant has all the making of a fantasy stud from his profile, but he's a true question mark now that he's in Seattle. It sounds like he's going to be on the field a lot in these 12 personnel sets, along with Will Disley. You know, how has Fant looked, and what should we expect from these tight ends?
Yeah, Noah's been a lot more quiet than I would have thought. In this offense, I'm not even sure how many times I've seen him catch a touchdown. I'm in practice. I'd have to go check my notes. I mean, I'm sure he's had a few, but maybe like one or two in the days of practice that I saw. I missed like 3 days in early August, but been out there every other day since. I don't know if that'll translate to the regular season. You know, Noah's had a couple explosive catches in the preseason, but man, yeah, I expected based on the numbers, because I don't really watch a bunch of Denver prior to the season. You know, I've gone back and watched some Denver tape just to see Drew and just see a little bit of Noah, and like Noah looked really good, but I think part of that was he wasn't on a team with Tyler Lockett and DK Metcalf. So I think he's had like top 10, top 12-ish tight end production since he entered the league as a first-round pick in 2019. I don't know if that continues just because, A, he's on a run-first offense, and B, he's with two other pass catchers who are like noticeably better and who deserve the ball in obvious passing situations like that.
All right, Mike, I have one final question, but it's a bit of a toughie. I'm going to make you put yourself out there. All right. What's your boldest fantasy prediction for the Seahawks team in 2022?
I don't know if it's bold. I think Ken Walker will end up being their leading rusher. I just think that kid, once he gets right, man, he's probably the most talented guy they got, man. Like, I don't know what the rookie of the year odds are. I think George Pickens maybe leads or something like that. Maybe Kenny Pickett, although that might drop. I just read that Trubisky is the starter. But, yeah, I think Ken should be considered with all the guys named or mentioned in that discussion for offensive rookie of the year. Man, that kid, I call him a kid. I'm only 30. But, yeah, that Ken is a special talent, man. He's perfect for this run game. And it might be one of those situations where, man, it takes – Rashad to just have one little nagging thing and for Ken to get a bunch more carries and then just get hot. I get to see Ken getting hot behind this whole line. So I don't know how bold that is, but like I think the ceiling is very high for Ken Walker and early too. Like I don't think it'll take two or three years down the line for us to be like, oh, it's Ken Walker, he's nasty. Like I would say that by like week three if he's healthy.
Do you have one more minute to give us some more hardcore Ken Walker content here? We kind of skipped over him a little bit. He's sidelined with the hernia. Sounds like you're pretty high on him. And should people be, you know, taking advantage of his dipping ADP with this injury news?
It depends on like team your league size and all that. Rocky bench size. Like I'm in a 14 team, 3 bench spots, PPR. So like Ken's probably going to fall pretty far. But you know, I'm going to try to get him. But it'll probably be like a stash type of thing. I don't think he'll come out the gate as the guy. Like you said, he's got a hernia issue. And there's no timeline for his return. So there's going to be a big queue next to him for questionable. So can't like take him too high. But if you do, man, once he gets on the field, I think I'll put it that way. If you can be patient, like you're in a team with like a bunch of bench spots, like I'm in one with like a 10 team with like 7 bench spots, which is way too many. If you're in one of those, yeah, you can go ahead and got the luxury of taking Ken and sitting on him until he goes. Because like I said, I do think that when he gets going, he'll be a really explosive dude. I think he and Rashad, they both have that like second gear to get to the end zone. You know, like Chris Carson, I think longest run is like 60 yards. I think he has 2 of that length and he didn't score on either one of them. And one of them, I think he actually fumbled. But like actually 2 of them. He might have fumbled on both. But anyway, my point is that Chris had really good speed, but Chris Carson was not like a game breaker in that way. He was more like a thumper. Whereas you let Rashad get the corner or Ken get the corner, they're going to score. And I think that's the difference. You know, you see Saquon do that. You see Zeke do that sometimes. You know, the Chubb, the guys who can hit Derrick Henry, the guys who can hit the corner and go. Yeah, that's what Ken's going to be, I believe.
This has been incredible, much needed information for us fantasy degenerates, Mike. You can find him at Mike Dugar on Twitter. He covers the Seahawks for The Athletic. And if you don't subscribe to The Athletic at this point, I don't know what you're doing. He also hosts a Seahawks Man-to-Man podcast. Anything else you got going?
No, the podcast and The Athletic is the main thing to subscribe to the podcast. We're on YouTube, Spotify, Seahawks Man-to-Man. That's the number 2 man. I should have prefaced all of that fantasy insight with that. I am a not good fantasy player, like relative to my knowledge of football. I don't end up last in all my leagues, but you know what I mean? Like relative to me knowing, I know a lot about football. I taught X and O's with you for a while. That does not translate to fantasy success at all. I just want to clarify that. Like I'm not the fantasy guru at The Athletic. That is our guy. I think his name is Nuno or something like that. Like those guys at The Athletic, they know the stuff.
Well, you've provided clarity on all the rooms in Seattle, so I think gamers and drafters are excited to walk away with that information and take that into draft day. So thank you once again, and have a great season.
All right, thanks for having me.
Thank you. Please. Ken Walker, late season league winner. You are now dialed in.
This is the story of the one. As head of maintenance at a concert hall, he knows the show must always go on. That's why he works behind the scenes, ensuring every light is working, the HVAC is humming, and his facility shines. With Grainger's supplies and solutions for every challenge he faces, plus 24/7 customer support, his venue never misses a beat. Call quickgrainger.com or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.